What's up, Myco family? Myco Trovic here. Welcome back to my podcast, where together we are going to grow in mind, body, spirit, and mushroom. In today's special episode, we have another guest. This is Daniel Rogers of MicroPose. He's the founder, main operator, I would say, established in 2019, so right around the COVID area. That's basically when I became aware of you, when you were on the scene, because you were like one of the newest innovative like product lines that like was really helping growers out. I'm really excited to share you, your business with everybody today. So Daniel, how are you doing? Thanks for coming on the show today.
Good. Thanks for having me, man. I'm doing pretty good.
That's great, bro. So MicroPose. Oh my gosh. I literally just used probably 50 of your like injection ports and filter patches on a bunch of the deli cups I'm running for Cordyceps. So handy. And you have a myriad of products. Like what started your mycology journey, and were these products kind of like an evolution or manifestation of your need to make things easier, or what does that look like for you? How did it all begin?
Yeah. So, the product itself, the business itself kind of started as an accident. I was growing oyster mushrooms just because I was bored, and I was frying them and breading them and stuff. So it was more for home use. And yeah. I hated using the polyfill stuffing, the pillow stuffing. So I was like, I wonder if there's like any kind of tiny filter that's a pre-made solution for it. And I started surfing on Alibaba, and I found a person that made filters. It was some tiny business that made filters, but they weren't using things that were heat resistant or autoclavable. So I asked him if he would be able to use the adhesives that I chose and the raw materials that I chose. And then we came up with something that worked. It survives the autoclave and it's temperature resistant. And yeah, so it started like that as a personal product. And I probably had those things for a year before I became MicroPose, because I grew it a few times and then I just set them on the shelf and I had 5,000 units. Never thought to make it a product to sell. And then one day, you know, going through financial straits, I just got the bright idea, like, all right, fuck it. Let's see if these people want to see them. And anybody that had a couple hundred followers or more, which 500 followers at the time was big in the mushroom industry in 2019. Yeah. And I just gave them away for free. I gave almost all my inventory for free. And I said, if you like them, please share them. If you don't like them, tell me why they suck. And that's how it started. Wow. So
you took a risk. And it happened by accident, bro. That is like the entrepreneurial way. I couldn't imagine like a cooler start. And I would say across the board, everybody uses those now. It's almost like standard. And if not, of course, everybody, like just the other day, like before I had, I need to order more before I realized I actually had some more in the top left, right shelf of my lab. Before that it was using RTV gasket maker to make self-healing injection ports, which is like a sticky, dirty job itself. You know, yeah. It doesn't smell good. It dries fast. You got to do it just right. And then like micropore tape's cool, but it's really like just not a viable solution. It like tears easy. It mucks up. Sometimes the filters like glaze over, and you're really not getting airflow. So you really brought a big solution to probably what's, I would say, the most, like probably one of the biggest and most important aspects of growing any kind of mushroom. That's air exchange. And this, because it's used all the way from liquid culture, the actual bags or tubs, depends on what you're growing, how you're growing it. So you really like found a cool niche. And then so you started with patches and things like that. What have you developed since then? Or what are you most excited about that you're maybe working with or developing in the future? If you have anything new, can you tell us about it?
Yeah. So, I mean, going down, I guess, the timeline of things, within 3 or 4 months, I discovered that these were actually going to be something that gained traction. And so instantly I was like, okay, what's next? What do we got to do next? Let's come up with something else. And the injection ports, became an idea. I said, okay, I wonder if there's something that we can make that, that'll heal and you pass a needle through, but it stays on, it can withstand the autoclave. So I used that same durable adhesive and found a silicone foam that I liked, and the samples were healing really well. And that was born 4 or 5 months after the initial rush. Midwest Grow Kits, who's the founder of that company, is a great friend of mine. He's the first guy that put faith in me and made a really big order. He fronted me the money to get it. And that was when I was a nobody. So, yeah. So, wow, but he requested, he was like, hey, I used to be able to get these monotub filters. Can you do something with that? And I was like, I'll see what I can do. And so the next thing was the 2-inch monotub filters, and that changed everything. Like once those got released, it changed the business blew up. So.
So when you say it blew up, like to what extent were you semi busy during the week, part-time job, or were you like then be able to shift full-time to the business? What did that look like?
Yeah. So, like 6 months into the business, and I was pushing as hard as I could on Instagram. All pretty much 100% of my business at that time was on Instagram. Mm-hmm. And, I was sharing it and giving away free inventory left and right just to get people to kind of get the word out. And yeah. About 6 months in, I was making enough to replace a normal job, and it happened pretty quick. But wow. Willie Michael picked me up before the completion of year one, and he ended up making a full review of the injection ports and filters, and it quadrupled overnight. It just went crazy from there.
Wow.
And so then it wasn't just, you know, having job replacing income. It was like, okay, now I can settle down, and I've actually got a business here. This is something that's viable to grow and make a living on. Like, this is like, okay, I can make $5,000 a month. I'm secure selling these filters, but now it's like, okay, this is like a full-time career thing. Let's jump headfirst into this. This is working.
Right. So you said a majority of your sales were from Instagram. After that, how has it developed? Are you working with like local, mushroom farmers? I would assume like the application of these products can be used in a lot of different sciences. Like what kind of, B2B are you doing these days now, or how has that changed?
Right. So I've developed mostly as a B2B company. People might be surprised to know that my retail sales aren't very huge. Like there's people that that make much more than me that don't look like they've been around very long because I haven't concentrated on that part of the business. And so most of my sales is like, okay, you know, how can we bolster my partner's brand? So I do a lot of private labeling and I do a lot of custom stuff like these tubs here. Midwest Grow Kits actually uses these tubs, the same model. And people have brought it to me like, I think they're copying your tubs. But no, I private label and I can put logos on plastic and everything. So I have a lot of those kinds of partnerships. And that's really where I've excelled. So I'm not the greatest at reading people or like selling directly to people, but I know more inside what a business is looking for because it's not as personal. It's more just numbers and facts, and my brain works in a box. I'm not like a.
I get that. Yeah, more. I wouldn't say transactional, but it's pretty straightforward. And
right,
a lot of the time, those people know exactly what they want instead of like, you know, onesie twosie things. Totally understand. That's great. So you're mostly
B2B. I don't
like
selling either. It's uncomfortable for me to sell on a person, you know, but a business, that's what you're interacting with them for. So it's like, it doesn't feel as uncomfortable.
Well, I do have to say, man, you didn't have to sell me. Just the product itself and the ease is what sells it. And I think you've done a great job of that. So you're doing super well for yourself now. I mean, you literally, like, the first thing I noticed when we hopped on here were all these boxes behind you. Like, are you, and I think even on your story, I just like see you just walking by like boxes and boxes and boxes. What would you say is like the most purchased item from you of your product line?
I would say the injection ports at unit volume. It might not be the most generating, but by unit volume, people buy the injection ports like crazy.
Wow.
And I think it's mostly bag users that they don't want to pay the extra like 90 cents what it is to have a bag that has the injection port integrated when they can stick one on and it does the same thing. And so I think that's because the bag market is such a broad market and a lot of people use bags that's where the volume is coming from. But by unit volume, the injection ports are going pretty crazy.
That's awesome. So you're full-time here now, but do you do any kind of mycology? Are you growing any oyster mushrooms like you were back then? Like, do you have more free time to do so? Or are you pretty preoccupied with what you're doing now?
Yeah. So my day, I wake up at like 10 o'clock in the morning after being up until about 4 o'clock at night or, you know, in the morning. So, and then I come here or I'm talking to the lawyers during the daytime. It's like, there's so much stuff going on right now that I don't really have hobbies. And thank goodness I love what I do, but this is my hobby. I haven't grown anything and I haven't taken a vacation in a little while, but yeah, I haven't grown mushrooms in a long time. I'd like to get back into it. But.
So you said you were growing some oysters. What else were you growing? Or was that like your main jam?
The oysters for food, but you know, we've got other things that everybody grows the psychedelics, but yeah, I was growing psychedelics too. Not in as great a volume, just for personal use, but
yeah, I mean, I get that totally. Like what I do now, like for content creation, it's what I do full time, and it's hard to maintain other hobbies. I wouldn't say I have hobbies. I have interests, and there's like a handful of things that I put my energy into. I realize the more I put my energy into, the thinner I'm spread, and the more of like the wall I hit faster. So you really have to designate your energy to like three main. I was just talking to Mossy Creek Mushrooms about this, like three things that you have to focus on. And usually that's like family. I guess one pillar can be like health and wellness, and then like really like the business, but the business itself can like branch into several things itself. So you really have to be particular. So totally understand that. So you guys were, it was in 2019. So this was when you guys were established, when you established, I should say. Have you taken on any partners? Do you have employees? What is the structure of your business? Has that changed a lot?
Honestly, so we've made it pretty far with having a small team. So we've got someone for fulfillment, and then I've got somebody that's got just more bandwidth to accomplish things that I brought on as a partner. So that's my COO, the one that just executes and kills, and I can focus more on the business end. And then we have a media person that we're trying to get to kind of develop some more character behind our business, because we don't really have much of that going on, like social media presence and content and how to use things. And, you know, my stuff is all in the wild, but there's really no instruction on how to use any of it. And that's kind of an uncomfortable position to be in. But yeah, we've got four people right now, and it's done pretty well.
Well, if you need a commercial made, I would love to make one for you. And we talked about in the past, I think I just had gotten overwhelmed with the amount of work I had to do at the time. Like I think I was making one for like Inoculate the World, one for Michael Alchemy. It's something I do, but man, like I use your products like every week in my lab.
I'd be down to do that. Let's partner on something and get, you know.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It'll be like, I'll send you some samples after this. It'll be like video with voiceover application and multiple uses. Like, yeah. But anyways, that's side chat. So you don't really have a lot of hobbies. You're super focused on the business. We're going into the new year here. By the time this airs, it'll already be 2024 probably. So what are some of your goals for this year that you're looking forward to? And, I mean, what do you want to accomplish this year with your business? Do you want to scale? Do you want to have another facility? Do you want to just kind of like max out your current facility? What do you want to strive for this year?
So day before yesterday, we signed a lease for an additional 20,000 square feet in high ceiling building. Cool. So we're going to actually start bringing in a lot more inventory, and we've got a lot of big distribution partnerships that are coming to a close now. And so we should be in a lot of retail spots for some of our plastic products, the tubs and the filters and ancillary products that go with it. So I suppose the main goal for MicroPose is to become kind of like the all one-stop distributor. Yeah. And so we'd like to get, you know, multiple warehouses, but we're starting in Michigan, but we'd like to have multiple warehouses so we can chop down on those lead times and cost of logistics and stuff. But, you know, I'm trying to bring down the prices of Petri dishes. I think that $60 price point for disposable 90 millimeters is a very achievable permanent price. Mm. And I'd like to make sure that happens. I get messages all the time, like, when are you bringing back the PS dishes? So those are coming.
That's cool.
I would eventually, and this is a project that I've got half my feet or half my body in the door is manufacturing bags and, you know, having another American made manufacturer for mushroom bags, filtered mushroom bags and ones with injection ports. So it's rolling everything that I have in income into just creating new products and trying to be, if I can't do it better or I can't do it at a higher quality, I won't touch it. But I'm pretty confident that in bags and Petri dishes and even a couple substrate solutions, I'll be able to help bring down costs and things. But that's the goal. Just keep going.
That's an amazing vision you have there. And from just who you are and who I've met, you know, I met you, I got to see you at the Oklahoma Mushroom Festival, just watching how you operate and watching how you work. and people's response to your business. I know that'll happen. You'll definitely like get to where you want to get. That's amazing. Another one of your products I liked was the silicone sleeves you put over the jar tops.
Yeah.
You've got injection, self-healing injection ports, filter patches. You've got patches, like the really big patches for jar lids. Am I missing anything? You have your tubs. What are you working on next? Or you said bags, but I want to digress and talk about that. Word on the grapevine is that, and if anybody didn't know this, I kind of want to talk to you about this, but also make others aware that obviously the owners of Unicorn Bags are no longer new owners, whoever owns it now, got bought out or they sold, whatever. And that I just heard through the grapevine that company is working hand in hand. What still is Unicorn Bags is working like hand in hand with the local police department. And when there's any like large orders, they're essentially investigating people. So man, to have another bag distributor would be amazing. And just the quality, man, like Unicorn used to be like the standard. And now like I couldn't tell you how many bags I'd ordered. And it seemed like every three or four bags, one of the filter patches was like ripping or splitting. Like how do you even start with bags? Are you going to use a specific type of proprietary filter? Are you going to have them made somewhere else? Like what's your direction with that? You want to make them in-house?
Yeah. So I guess that the problem that they have, and I'm surprised that they didn't spot it because I'm sure there's a lot of plastics engineers that work for that company, but you have to address the problem of material selection first. So if you have two steel pipes that you want to weld together and you try to use aluminum to join those pieces together, it's not going to work. They're just not going to bond correctly and it'll be a weak bond. The problem is that they're using a lot of materials that aren't the same material as the polypropylene sheeting. And so it's the same problem. If you're trying to put a Tyvek or you know, even like a polystyrene nonwoven or something like that, you're just not going to get the joint. It's just not going to join very well. So I think if we run with like an SMS, some kind of hydrophobic material that repels water that can still filter at like a 0.3 micron, which I think is pretty suitable for most aseptic applications because your flow hood works under positive pressure at 0.3 microns. And so something at atmospheric pressure using 0.3 microns is plenty to filter out bacterial and spore contaminants. So you do an SMS material that's made out of the same material as your bag, and you might get a lot better bond. I've got samples here of bags that I've already made that the bond is just fantastic. And before the separation of the filter and the bag happens, you're actually ripping the bag, the film itself, before that happens. So it's, you know, I think that that's one way that we can make improvements in reliability. You know, the other way is just responsible sourcing of materials. We could probably drop the cost. Fortunately for us, Michigan is an oil producing state. And so a lot of plastics refineries and things like that exist around where we are. And so we don't have to travel far by rail to get cheap goods straight from the factories that make these polymers. Okay. So there's a couple of solutions. I think we can make a high quality product and still be very competitive on price, even with our, you know, the imported or foreign counterparts there. I think we can be competitive.
I think so too. What kind of sciences did you have to kind of like learn or get into, or did you have any prior knowledge? I know you had said you worked with this small company and you brought, you know, specific adhesives and things, different like material to them, and they kind of manufacture this, but did you have to learn? Did you already kind of know this? Like, where did your knowledge base start, and what is it kind of like grown into now?
Yeah. So I've got no formal education in anything. I was a high school dropout, didn't get a GED, nothing. I got
love that.
When I find something that interests me, I obsess to the point where I know enough about it to be dangerous. And then I release it, or I try to do something with it. And then I refine along the way. I try to make it better if there's something wrong with it or something like that. But, it's pretty much just paying attention to the parameters of the things that you need. So if I need a filter that can withstand 250 degrees Fahrenheit at high temperatures, the first thing I do is I look at, okay, what's the adhesive rating for this particular adhesive? Does it have the guts to make it through a pressure cook, and can it do it several times? Can it heat and then cool and still fall back into its original quality? And then you look at your filter material. I need something that filters at 0.3 microns. It has to be hydrophobic, that repels water and doesn't absorb, and it also has to withstand that cooking. And then you just blend the optimal materials that you find. And then once you get something that works, you shop around as hard as you can for those materials in bulk, and then you try to drive your costs down. So it's a lot of just knowing what parameters you need to survive or for that thing to work. And then you hunt around for the best prices you can, and you produce them in mass quantities so you keep your prices down.
Awesome. You've probably made a lot of improvements along the way. What were some of your first struggles when you were developing, I guess, some of your first products, and what are some of the improvements that you've made that people are using these like these days?
The first big thing that I thought, oh my God, my reputation is finished. So I looked up temperature resistances for the injection port thing. I was using an EPDM, which is kind of a foam plastic. They use it for weather stripping on windows and things like that. Mm. And for my understanding, it had the temperature rating that I needed to survive autoclave cooks. But it was only for the solid plastic, not the foam plastic that's, you know, the open cell foam. And so I made a whole run of these injection ports. And then when people ran it under their, you know, their autoclave cycles, they'd flatten out and then they wouldn't heal correctly. And I took a huge reputational hit on that in late 2019. It was like one of the first big mistakes. And then right after that, I was like, you don't have to send me anything back. I'll refund everything that was bought. And so I refunded everybody without question. And I said, look, I'm going to send you guys more on the house so that you guys still have faith in me. And I brought the silicone version out and it just worked flawlessly. So that was probably the first major improvement I had to, that first edit that I had to do. And I didn't, you know, so that was scary. I was like, oh no, I've crashed the ship.
Well, not only did you give everybody his money back, but you then gave them product with your newly refined, you know, product. And I'm sure after that, like, so you didn't just make it right. You made it even better. That shows a lot of integrity. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I refunded it and it just made him pay for shipping. So I didn't have to come out of shipping, but all the raw materials, the injection ports themselves is like, just, yeah. And I wasn't very big at that point. So it's not like it was thousands and thousands of dollars. It was, you know, maybe like 100 separate orders. And I was, so it wasn't the death of me, but still hurt.
Well, luckily that happened early on.
You know? Yeah. Lesson learned. Now I think about everything a lot before I release it.
What product are you most excited about right now? I know, I think I saw was it the Oklahoma Mushroom Festival? You were giving some of these away.
So there was like three or four vendors that got this top secret thing, and there's really nobody that knows about it right now. I don't even have a sample of it right now, but it's there's a lot of companies that have tried to pelletize coir, and I guess you're the first person that I'm announcing this to publicly. Whoa. But there's not a lot of natural materials in coir that makes it bind really well in a pellet, and so it's very difficult to get done. But with a couple of mechanical changes and under optimal conditions, we got it to bind pretty well, and it's still just pure coir. So what that'll do is it'll allow you to hydrate your coir faster, because when you pour water in pellets versus a brick, there's more water penetration per surface area, and so you get expansion a lot faster. And the other thing is you're not stuck with a massive quantity. You can kind of select the quantity that you want, because you can choose a certain amount of pellets versus being stuck with a 5 kilo brick or a 650 gram brick. It's a convenience I hope to get circulated around the hydroponic community. And I'm sure the mycology community will accept it. So
that's a game changer, bro. Are you kidding me? Oh yeah. My gosh. Yeah, that is huge. That is huge. Cause so many techs were made around like what was available. So for instance, like, I used to go to PetSmart or Petco, whatever had them. And I would go find those like 3 Coca-Cola brick packs. They were like $12.58 or whatever they were, $20 at the time. And Bucket Tech was made around one of those.
Yeah.
And that's like, you know, for a tub. But then you have all these people asking like, well, how many quarts of this? How many quarts of the, you know, you really can like, I think with that, you can really expand on, you know, oh man, my mind's going all over the place. That's really cool. And thank you for sharing that. I feel special that you got to tell me about that.
Yeah. I feel like it'll be a good move in pet supplies too. Cause like the problem still exists with pet supplies, like lizard bedding, is that like, you know, you got a 10 gallon tank that's, you know, tiny, or a 5 gallon tank or something that's really tiny. and then you hydrate one brick and you've got all this extra material you're storing in a bucket for a long time. So
sure.
I see it as a pet supply hydroponic thing, and hopefully it works.
Oh, and everybody in the community, in the mycology community, is going to go ape for that. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So what are some of the like core tenets, or I guess you could say some of the pillars of like your belief systems just in your life in general, and how is that translated into your business? Like, clearly to me, like, you're just a good guy, you're a good person. And just like, for example, the example you just gave with, like, you know, you had a product that was, you know, not the best, you repaid everybody and then you even sent them more. But what are some of like the core pillars of beliefs or understandings in your life that you kind of, or tenets, I guess the word is, I always ask people, what are the tenets that you kind of like operate by? Or if you had like, you know, 3 to 4, what would you say those are?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, there's a certain power in accountability. And the reason I say that there's power in it, and it's not just a principle, is because when you realize that you're the master of your own circumstances and that you can turn nothing into something, that you only have to take accountability for everything that you do, observe why things happen around you, then it makes it so that you're not a victim to external circumstances. So I think the best thing that people can do is kind of just make sure that they're accountable for everything that they do, observe why things are happening, and then they can go and build a life that they want, you know. But I think accountability is one of the biggest things that I had to train myself. I was a pretty shitty guy, dude. I did coke a lot back in the day, and I just stayed drunk all the time, and it's like, it didn't get me anywhere. And so I think as when I got done with a pretty hefty jail sentence for some things, I kind of got out, things slowed down, and then I started changing things. But yeah, accountability is one. The other thing is honesty. You know, try to stay honest. You know, it's not going to help you to lie to yourself or other people. It's kind of along the lines of accountability, but
yeah, I was going to say they're kind of hand in hand, just different shades or different perspectives. So, wow. You've made very similar to you. Like, yeah, for a long time, I was just not very accountable and was like, why is the world happening to me? It's like, no, I'm happening to the world. And it's just reaction, if you will, like, you know, certain thoughts turn into certain intentions, and those intentions turn into actions. Each of those actions has a result, and those results over a time are going to give you a specific reality. But you have to realize you're the one making those decisions and creating that reality around you. So if you change your thoughts, you know.
Did your military background play a part in that? Getting, you know, kind of that discipline? And because I notice on some of your stories and stuff, you're lifting them weights. I see this big flag in the background. How did that have an impact on your life?
Oh, yes. I'm very, very proud of my time in service.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, wasn't able to continue because of a few back surgeries that I had prior to getting out. I was going to be a drill instructor. I was going to be that, like, motard is what I would call it. Dude, I would be at like year 15, 16 or something like that right now. Almost ready to retire. But discipline wise, I would say so. Yeah, definitely. And it was being forced to do things I didn't want to do that were really hard day after day after day after day. And then you realize you train your body and your mind to do something. And if you do it for some time period, pretty much around 40 something days or so, your body starts to do it for you. And your body is a emanation of your subconscious mind. And if you can train your subconscious mind to do something, it's 50,000 times more powerful than your conscious mind. So,
right. Yeah. And if you go through,
that's
why I believe in putting yourself through, like, doing difficult situations on purpose, like making calls that, you know, make you uncomfortable, or going out and mowing the lawn, even though you got somebody that might live with you that could do it. It's just, you do things that make you uncomfortable so that all the shit that makes a difference is fucking easy to accomplish. Cause like, it's just, oh yeah, I've already done this. Well, what the hell is this going to do? So yeah, I believe in putting yourself through uncomfortable positions like that, like the cold dunking that you're doing. Like that is a huge psychological trainer. And I've done that. Like, I've done that for a while. I haven't done it in a while, but I did it for a while.
Oh yes. Yeah. Cold plunging. Man, if there's like one hack I could give to every human being, if I could have them come over and just experience it once, maybe not once. If I could coerce, I don't know the right word for this, convince, I should say, sell the idea of like, okay, we're going to do this, but for like 2 weeks straight every day, how much it would change, not just your biology, your physiology, but also your mindset. Because I've been cold plunging for well, I mean, at my home with the cold plunge I built personally for over a year and a few months now, but you know, throughout the years prior, I did it like at like men's retreats or just retreats in general. And it sucked, but like doing it consistently, I learned that even at a year and a couple months of doing it pretty much like 5 or 6 days a week, I still get like a heart jump. I still feel my reptilian brain being like, well, maybe you could just like go back inside and drink a nice warm coffee. You know, I have all these thoughts. I'm like, those are not my thoughts. That's like my reptilian brain. I'm like, no, fuck that. And I just get right in the cold. And you know, you realize after a while you have a certain pain tolerance, you meet the pain tolerance, and then there's a benefit from it. And then you do it so much to where like it doesn't affect you as much. And then, so like I do that every single morning, obviously on workout days, it's great to do prior to working out, or a walk or just to wake up. But like, if I can do that, the mentally hardest thing in my entire life, literally, if I can do that first, then going to the gym or doing taxes or whatever might be like super emotionally uncomfortable or having uncomfortable conversations or doing things like that are new or that I haven't tried before are just like, whatever. So there has to be disciplines or has to be like something uncomfortable. What other uncomfortable things do you do in your life, or how, like, are you, do you have any other practices or disciplines that you consistently held or that you love?
So, you know, I've been slacking for the past like 6 months, and I hate saying that, but I used to do like, you do 3 days in a row fasting, and then you do a couple more days of bone broth, and then you go back to like, you know, your low sugar diets and stuff like that. So I used to do a lot of fasting, and I was clearer in those days than I think I've been in a very long time. Like, I remember the amount of brain power and bandwidth and just focus that I had. Just, you know, there's a statistic, and I'm not sure where I heard this from, but if you shrink a dog's weight by like 20% of their average, they live like 3 or 4 years longer or something like that. It's when you feed them a lot more. Yeah, it's like, I forgot what the statistic is. So yeah, it's not good for you to have surplus shit running around in there and having a high sugar diet. And there's a whole thing that I used to do, and I really got to get back on it. But I'm one of those people that needs a drill sergeant to keep me there. I need an accountability buddy or whatever they call it.
Accountability buddies are great, dude. If I lived near you, I'd be at your house, or I'd have you over cold plunging every day. Literally just yesterday, last night, I broke a 3-day fast. I did my first water fast I had done in like maybe like 2+ years. And
how do you feel?
I feel great, bro. My gosh. I woke up this morning with like, I'm like, oh yeah, this is what it feels like to be human again. I was like 212 pounds. My upper intestines, like upper abdominal wall, was semi swollen. I'm like, I can't see like my shape of my abdominal wall anymore. I was like, fuck, what's going on? I was like, it's time to cleanse. So just 3 days, lemon water, some shilajit, salt, and was doing the same routine essentially. So yeah, I feel great. So dude, I believe in fasting. If you're doing that, it's legit. Well, hopefully I don't know. This conversation inspires you, man. There's no such thing as slacking. There's just taking breaks. That's all. Yeah. You know?
Yeah. You That's call all, it man. Slacking. You're giving yourself ebb permission to put a label on it and go. So
yeah, can't very call true. It slacking. No, there's ebb That's and flow.
Mental poison. Yeah.
Again, once more.
If you call it slacking, it's mental poison. Cause then you're putting a title on it. It's not, you know, taking a break is different.
Yeah.
That's the intention of going back. Yeah.
So you're over in Michigan, correct?
Yeah.
How long have you been in Michigan? Were you born and raised, kind of thing?
I was born in Stockton, California, and I was there for like 3 or 4 months, and then we came to Michigan. I've been here ever since. I did checkpoint in Washington for like 2 years. Just went out there, hung out for a bit, came back. But yeah, mostly Michigan.
Well, if you stayed in Washington, we could have crossed paths somehow, because I was actually born in California also, and probably like less than a year after my dad had moved my mom to California, and we stayed there. But how do you like Michigan? Is it getting cold over there or what?
Yeah, we had about one day where we had a couple inches of snow, and it's been just warm enough to stay out of the snow. But yeah, it's cold right now.
Oh man,
we're almost Goodness time to break gracious. Out the 4-wheel drive.
Oh my gosh, how are you staying warm out there? Are you eating differently? Are you bringing hot cocoa with you, 5 layers? And then some days, I'm guessing it just snows and you can't even. You can't even go anywhere, kind of thing.
Actually, I buy a ton of this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I got like 20 boxes in my kitchen. And I heat it up on the stove like my morning coffee. I don't drink coffee. And then I pour it in my thermos and I sip on that for the first half of the day. And then, you know, I try to do like one good meal a day or maybe even two good meals a day, but it's usually just this in the morning. I don't really do heavy load in the morning.
Smart. I love that. Like amino acids, you're getting all your collagens, things like that. And a little extra, I guess there's like nutrient broth in there as well. Like vegetables.
Yeah.
I use that same brand
too. Protein in here too.
This one thing has 19 grams of protein.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got pretty much everything you need for the morning, and it's light. You know, you don't feel bogged down and you know, like eating oatmeal. Oatmeal is heavy and it's carbs and, you know, feel like shit. So
basically like a ton of bricks in your stomach.
Yeah.
So is your entire family out there? Do you have brothers or sisters?
Yep. Got a sister. She lives a couple cities over, and you know, my mom's local, grandma's local. Yeah. Mostly everybody's out here.
That's nice. Awesome. You got any plans for the holidays this year?
Man, I'd like to get out of here and go to like Mexico or something. We'll see if I can take the time off, but I'd like to get out of the country.
Well, if you ever want to come to somewhere warm and hang out, you know, you can always come to Arizona and hang out with me. I'm just like not too far from Mexico too. So you never know. Trip might be in line there.
Let's come up with something. Yeah. I was invited by a friend of mine to the Dominican Republic, and believe it or not, only this year, a few months ago is when I first, you know, got my first passport. So yeah, I'm ready to go, but I haven't even put a stamp on it yet. So I've never been out of the country in my whole life, ever.
Oh, dude, it's time. It's time.
Yeah.
We got it.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Okay, cool. So some possible travel. Yeah, I would like to get out of here too. Are you going to be going to the Entheogen Fest in California here in San Diego, February timeframe? I just posted it to my story. It's a Miss Mush SoCal's event.
Yeah. So, my guy at the warehouse, we've been talking about that. We are thinking about going out there. If we do a table, we have to send everything out there. And I'm just, you know, I have to see. I don't know. We're thinking about sure. it. I would like to.
Yeah. What did you think of the Oklahoma Mushroom Festival? That was really cool. It was really cool to see like Tim and Bass and Mike O'Mentor. There was so many people there. Seeing yourself was cool. Just like buddies. like we've all been like, we're all friends. We've known each other, you know, like 2019-ish, you know, 18-ish, yeah. I guess, you know.
I got to say, Jacob really does put on an event. Like, a lot of the times, and this is my fear of a lot of events, is like you take the time out to go there, and what happens is the event organizer spends a lot of time on getting the vendors out there, but the actual outside traffic is not really there. Jacob did a hell of a job marketing for that, because there was a great turnout.
Yeah, definitely.
So
yeah.
Yeah, but well, I liked it. Everybody was, you know, really cool. I finally met Twisted Tree in person and Boss and, and Inoculate the World and a bunch of other people. Yeah.
Are you going to have a booth at the next Oklahoma Fest?
Yes, I will. I will. I would be, I think I'd be an idiot not to.
Right. Yeah. I'm like, shit, should I have a booth? Fuck, man. Like,
yeah.
I don't even know what I don't even have anything to sell. I would just be like promoting the podcast essentially, but no, that's great. Yeah. Yeah. I guess I asked just because, I think this year, some of my goals are just to touch more of the community in a personal way, face to face, or just through content, bringing people like yourself on and really like sharing like I've never shared before. And yeah, like it was such I would say it was probably the most inspirational thing. Not that I was going to quit, but man, I had thoughts of just quitting what I was doing at the time, with like censorship and just the state of the world, and my mindset was so negative at the time. And then to go to the event and see people like yourself and all the guys, I was like, I got to keep going. It was great. So
you'd have a ton of disappointed people if you quit. You'd have so many sad people.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of very dedicated, like fucking hardcore followers of yours that really appreciate your content. And, you know, I think that it would be a loss. Don't ever think about that seriously now.
No, I didn't. As soon as I find that, and talking about discipline, like as soon as I would get to a point like that, I realized that I just need to get back in the lab, and whether it's like working on cultures that don't really need work, or just like what's the next step? Just walking into that space and being like, what's next? What's next?
Yeah.
Just keep going no matter what. Doing things you don't want to do when it's like the most uncomfortable, and it just becomes habit. Yeah, like not quitting.
One of the things I've always been interested in is like the evolution of human from a long time ago. And I feel like what we do every day in our lives can kind of be hacked to where you're more passionate about it. If you just kind of emulate the hunting strategies of, you know, getting up and going pursuing something new. It's like when you have to get up and hunt for your food, you do it because you have to survive, right? But I think the monotony of doing the same thing every day, or perhaps, you know, the boredom is what kind of brings you down. You're like, man, I don't know if I want to do this anymore. So I found out I've got an attention span of like 60 days or 90 days on a project. And so I know that within that 60 or 90 days, I have to develop everything about it and then get it perfect and then pass that project off to someone else that might grow it. But I establish the groundwork on it. Because it's like, you know, I want to hunt for a new creature. I have to find something new. So I think if you trick yourself or figure out how to make things exciting, or like another, I don't know, something new within your project to make it exciting, I think that's what it is. You just have to constantly try and do something new, I guess. I don't know how to explain it or how it would apply to you. But for me, it's
so
project.
It's so true. It resonates. Because what made me shift was getting back into more gourmets and learning something that was maybe not harder, but different. So which makes it out of routine, which makes it somewhat harder. And for me, that was Cordyceps militaris. There's so much that goes, so much different stuff that goes into it. It's a similar process, just different. And that meant reaching out to people who have a better knowledge base than me, reading books, watching videos, ordering equipment, rearranging the whole entire lab. And then, getting like a new energy, something I was excited about, like why I started in the first place. And then I can share all that too. And it's new content. So yeah, I think you're right. Finding passion within passion, if you will, you know?
Yeah.
It makes sense. So 2024 is going to be a big year, a good year. I can just feel it. Is there anything that you want the community to really know that you're doing, or that you want extra eyes on, or projects that people can support you the most on?
I guess I just like to let everybody know that I'm not stopping at what I've currently got. There's other things that are coming out. You know, the Petri dishes are a big thing. I know people were disappointed when I sold out of those and didn't rebuy. But we are coming out with those. I'm trying to reduce the cost of pre-pours. There's a way that I'm going to be working on that. But yeah, it's just, I guess, be patient while I try to refine the system and get more going.
Yeah, no worries. I'm excited to see what you get out, man. Again, like, you've been such a pillar. I'm so honored to have people like yourself on who are just pillars of our community. And you've done nothing but help me out. The stuff that you had sent me originally, I think I was a part of that, you know, like 500 or more, whatever follower that you gave me some stuff. And then I ran giveaways in my Discord Patreon community, then, you know, they start using the discount codes. I know that, like, I know my people are using your stuff. I see everybody reposting about it in the Discord. So, like, good job. Like, keep it up. I'm really excited for this year. As we digress here, just kind of like, as we end the podcast here, I want to kind of talk about, like, what inspires you the most and what kind of a message you have. If you had a message, I know you'd talked to me prior, you don't really have like a motto or things of that nature, but if you had a message, just even personally, maybe not for your business, what would you say your message is? And what would you let the enthusiasts or people of your community, what would you let them know?
I guess from a standpoint of motivation, you said, you know, what kind of motivates me? I really do dig when I get positive feedback about something. Like, it's reinforcing that, you know, I'm on the right path. I'm doing something that's important. You know, when people say, wow, you've changed the way I do this or something like that. So I kind of thrive on that. And I kind of pay attention where people's pain points are, and I try to help as much as I can. That's pretty much, that's the whole thing. The whole picture is I just pay attention. Like, I go in forums and I'll hang out. Like, I still go on Shroomery for a couple hours every week or something like that. Yeah, I still go. Yeah. 'Cause I've got friends that I developed from. I've been on that platform since 2010, I think. September of 2010. Yeah. So I still go on there and I pay attention to where people hate things or they like things. And then I've got a lot of friends on there where I still do personal calls every once in a while. And
yeah.
That's good to know. Okay, cool. So you're there, you're helping others, you're in the community, you're expanding. It sounds like you're just thriving, bro. And it's exciting to see. One question I always ask everybody who's on the podcast, And you can answer this short-winded, long-winded, interpret as you may. And it can be through practices, mindset, diet, whatever. In what ways are you, Daniel, growing in mind, body, spirit, and mushroom?
I'm getting back into my diet. And I think that's important. I think eating a good diet, making sure that you're eating clean, try not to do too much sugar. In my opinion, I'm not a dietitian or anything like that. But diet, I think, is what fuels your body is a great starting point. Another thing is allowing your time to have a bit of clarity. You can't be on your phone all the time. You know, sometimes I got to shut it off, put it in the other room, or put it in one of those anti-signal cases so that you don't, yep. You know, you're not tempted by the ringing or anything like that. Get outside and try not to be engulfed in screens too much. You know, I do meditation before bed, like visualization meditation. So if you set goals and then you think about those goals before you go to sleep, when you're sleeping, the subconscious mind goes to work on those things. And when you wake up in the morning, I have great dreams when I'm coming out of sleep. I have these great morning dreams that, you know, if I could retain a piece of that inspiration, that helps too. So I would say make time for meditation and self-reflection. And yeah, that's to me, I think that's important to make sure that you're clear.
Great answer. And I totally can back that. I'm a guy who like will listen to books when I'm sleeping. And what's crazy is you may think what did I even read last night? And then you go back into the book and you're like, oh yeah. Like you remember it, even though you didn't like consciously remember.
It's locked in.
Your unconscious takes it, runs with it. And then, if you're thinking about it when you're not even consciously thinking about it, that's killer advice. Totally support that. So Daniel, how can everybody support you? How can they find you? And what's the best way to contact you?
So I respond to personal emails. I'm trying to stay off too much of the Instagram, but I do answer Instagram. So if you go to my Instagram at Micropose, you can find me directly there. The website's micropose.com. And if you have questions about products or anything, then you can write info@micropose.com.
Gotcha. Now, as a, not a special for this episode, but just in general, any of my followers or anybody who's a patron or even just listening to this message, you guys can use discount code Microtrophic for a discount on your next order with Micropose. And if you guys enjoyed this video, make sure to give it a like, smash that like button. Don't forget to comment down in the comment section down below, subscribe for future content, and don't forget to hit the bell icon so you guys can be notified of upcoming episodes. Daniel of Micropose, do you have any lasting words?
Don't let anybody tell you no. That's the other thing. I was going to add that at the end of the last thing, but
love that.
Be persistent. Don't let anybody tell you no.
Sounds like great advice. Well, thank you, Daniel, so much for coming on to the show today. We appreciate you and look forward to having you back on the show at a later time.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good one. Peace.